Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast of today. The book is Heart to Start, the 8-week exercise prescription to live longer, beat heart disease, and run your best race. Our guest is Dr. James Beckerman. He is a preventive cardiologist, and he's out there in Portland, Oregon, at the Center for Prevention and Wellness at the Providence Heart and Vascular Institute in Portland. And also, he directs the cardiac rehabilitation program at Providence Medical Center. So, how is it that we can get people from the couch to 5K, to coin a term?
Well, it all involves finding your starting line. And so, we've been training folks to run 5Ks for several years out here.
First of all, just for people who are hopelessly mired in the mile system, what does 5K translate to?
5K would be 3.1 miles.
Okay.
And so, that's about, 12 times around a typical track.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's about finding your starting line. And one of the mistakes I think we've been making as healthcare providers is we're assuming that everybody is starting from the same place, and that's why we give them all the same message. And it's kind of a depressing one. It's, exercise 150 minutes per week. It sounds very clinical, very difficult to attain, and frankly, not very inspiring. And so one of the things that I do in the book is really try to emphasize the fact that my exercise program may not be the same as yours, and that's absolutely okay. As long as you are training to be a healthier version of yourself, it's not as important which route you take to get there.
You have to run your race, and for you, your Mount Everest may be different than Sir Edmund Hillary's.
That's absolutely right, literally and figuratively. And so once we accept the fact that it's okay for us to approach exercise from different vantage points, it's about trying to find a concrete program that makes sense for you. And that's why I came upon the helpfulness of a way to calculate your VO2 max, which is probably going to be a new phrase for a lot of people.
Well, to cut you off for a second, VO2 max is, very high performance athletes utilize VO2 max. They go to high performance technical laboratories, and they run till they're completely gassed on treadmills while attached to breathing apparatus, and with precise measurements. This is actually how Olympic athletes sometimes are trained, and they're actually power meters that competitive bicyclists use to determine how much power output they're making, in wattage. And so for just ordinary duffers, is this important?
Yeah, that's right. And so what people have learned through testing these high-level athletes in these high-level ways is that there are ways to basically calculate how efficient your body is in getting oxygen to your tissues and then extracting them. So that's the ultimate measure of what your fitness is.
So you don't have to go for a $3,500 workup at a cardiometabolic lab to ascertain this?
All you need is access to the internet, because there's been a great scientific study by this group from Norway where they looked at about 4,000 individuals ranging in age literally from 18 to 90. And they put all these folks on treadmills with the fancy apparatus like you described. And then they did a lot of math and figured out, well, what characteristics of these folks might have predicted their VO2 max? So things like age made a difference, things like waist circumference, even their prior history of how often they exercised. And so they came up with a really cool equation that you can input your own variables in, in about a minute, that will come out with a pretty darn impressive estimation of your VO2 max. Costs nothing to do. There's even an app for your cell phone that'll do it. And so once you've estimated your VO2 max, then the fun begins, because you get to find your own starting line with an exercise program that's literally customized to you.
And you, what people have done in the past, before the availability of all this new information, is they've done a crude subtraction. They've done, like, take 220 minus your age, and you get your maximum heart rate. And then you exercise, you know, 60, 70, 80% of your maximum heart rate. What's wrong with that formulation?
You know, I just don't think it's as applicable to as many people. Because one of the challenges,
you could be like a very fit 60-something, or you could be a very sedentary, out of shape 40-something.
Yeah, it turns out that there's lots of determinants of how fit we are, and also what our likely heart rate is to be at various levels of activity. So what I like about this other calculation or estimation of VO2 max is it basically takes what we've learned about heart rate and just brings it to the next level. Uses more information that makes it more personalized to your specific situation. Because there's nothing less inspiring than being asked to do a workout that isn't meant for you. And so if we can make this more of a personal exercise prescription, I'm optimistic that people will be more likely to fill it.
And so you have some self-tests that people can perform. Download a free application called VO2 Cal and take it from there. Or just head on over to www.worldfitnesslevel.org to access a website for its free online calculator. And then you perform self-tests, a six-minute walk test, plug in some other information, and then you'll get an answer.
That's exactly right. And I like the idea of giving people several different ways to measure their fitness, because fitness is not one size fits all. For some folks, it's more about their aerobic or cardiorespiratory fitness. And for others, it's more about strength and flexibility, mm-hmm. and balance, all of which are important and all of which kind of come into together to tell you where you should be starting. And the nice thing about these little fitness self-tests, not only do they take less than 10 minutes to do and require essentially no equipment or anything, but it gives you a place once you've gone through an exercise prescription, an 8-week program to get you going, you can do these little tests when you're done, and you can actually see how far you've gone. And I think they're guaranteed to be a lot more inspiring than being so reliant on the number that you see on the scale.
So the VO2 max is not something that's locked in. It's not like your innate exercise capacity. It's actually something you can modify. It's a trainable physiological characteristic.
That's absolutely right. By making our bodies more efficient, we can make our bodies more efficient. So I think that that's what makes this fun, is that even though we do have certain, you know, genetic tendencies towards
right.
a certain level of this or that, we can do something about it and make a difference and actually see it in real time.
Yeah, I'm actually beginning to explore some genetic testing, which, look, again, genetics is not a fate, but there are some people who are genetically endowed with the capability of having super VO2 max, and those are the people who you see in Olympic competition. And some of us, no matter how hard we train, it's not going to get us there because it's a genetic endowment.
Yeah, I mean, we all have our genetic starting lines, but I always try to think to myself, you know, you can't change that. It's what you're born with, literally. And the decision that you get to make for the next several decades is what you're going to do with it. And if we're not going to do much with it, then we may have a different outcome. And so it's a great opportunity. And so we should get motivated about it and see what we're capable of.
Well, I think I'm a cardinal example of this because I am not highly athletically endowed, but when it comes to determination, I'm pretty good in consistency, and that's gotten me to perform now into my 60s in ordinary triathlons, not Ironman triathlons, but Olympic distance triathlons, which is roughly 3 hours and change of, you know, continuous exertion. So it can be done.
It can be done. And what's, I think, also very interesting to see is, and I'm sure that you've seen, when you take care of folks who are at a similar age that you are, and you realize, wow, you know, we're all spending our time really differently, and it impacts the way that we grow, it impacts the way that we age, and frankly, it impacts our quality of life. And so if there's things that we can do to make an investment in that, I think that there are returns that are very real and really impact happiness and health in so many ways.
So take us through it. What might it look like for a 50-year-old guy who's maybe was a high school jock but kind of ignored exercise for a while, did your VO2 max calculation, comes in maybe not the lowest tier, but maybe the second lowest tier of VO2 max. What does a training program look like for him? It's, we're doing this podcast in winter. This is a guy who 6 months hence wants to do a 5K in the month of July or August.
I think that's a great goal right out of the gate, is to have your eyes on something in the future. And so the exercise prescription that I detail in the book is 8 weeks long, and it's really meant to get you to a point where you can start planning other goals for yourself. And so for the first 2 weeks, we're really concentrating on aerobic fitness. And so on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, if that makes sense for you, you would be doing an aerobic exercise, which for most folks, walking is fantastic exercise. Actually, Hippocrates, at least this quotation is attributed to Hippocrates, that walking is man's best medicine, and that applies to men and women. And so starting right out of the gate, we want you walking. You might start maybe just 20 minutes on each of those days, or if you come into this in quite impressive physical shape, you might be looking at 40 or minutes or even longer. And this is a nice, comfortable walk at a pace that feels good to you, and it's more just about getting it kind of drilled into your mind that walking and exercising is something that you should be doing and should be a part of your week. And so after a few weeks of that, then we start introducing some of the resistance training. Because it turns out that in order
to... So this is not all about aerobics. You actually emphasize resistance training, which has been given short shrift until recent years. You know, everybody's talking about aerobic this, aerobic that, and then lifting weights was for muscle heads and narcissists.
Yeah. The data for weightlifting and resistance exercise is really quite remarkable. You lower your blood pressure if you lift weights. You can improve your cholesterol and your blood sugar if you lift weights. And we're not talking about large amounts of weight at all. For a lot of folks, it could be 3 pounds, 5 pounds, maybe 10 pounds. But investing in a couple of little dumbbells is actually a very smart way to go. And so I detail about a dozen different exercises that you can learn to do that involve weights. They involve getting down on the floor and moving around a little bit, helping your core. And so we're going to do those on different days than we do the aerobic exercise.
And you don't have to join a fancy gym or invest in expensive equipment, because I see some of these exercises don't even require ancillary equipment. They're resistance exercises you can do on the floor, like plank exercises and things like that.
Absolutely. But, it's funny. I thought long and hard, should I include any dumbbells in this book? Because obviously, in order to use dumbbells, you've got to own dumbbells and you've got to buy them, even though they cost maybe $15 or $20 or something like that. I think that act of going into a place where you need to buy some fitness equipment or buying it online, what have you, there's something about that tiny investment that says that you're worth it and that it matters enough to you to do this that you're willing to plunk down $20 and own these weights. And you're going to see these weights in your home. They'll be in your bedroom when you're not using them. They'll be in your living room, what have you. And to have them there as a reminder of the prescription that you're trying to fill, I think there's some value in that. And that's why I think that in addition to them being really helpful and beneficial in all sorts of different types of exercise, I like the idea that they will be part of your home for years to come, and that you can come back to them later. Maybe you'll size up to something new and different along the way. So I think that we could all use something like that.
What's your view of the tracking technology? A lot of this stuff, with the iWatch, the advent of that in a couple of months, and people using Fitbit and Jawbone and different devices like that to, even the iPhone inherently calculates your steps. Do you incorporate that?
I chose not to incorporate those technologies in the book for the reason that I don't think any of us know yet which one is going to be the stickiest.
Okay.
And I'm finding that I'm reading more and more articles about how it's likely that the ancillary activity trackers like Fitbits are probably going to go away as our cell phones get more and more you know, technologically advanced, because then you only have to have one piece of technology with you as opposed to several.
I had my cell phone for fully 2 months before I realized that it was tracking my every step, my every stair climb. And I said, oh, that's cool. I've got a 2 month record of how far I've gone.
Yeah.
There's actually little accelerometers in virtually every modern cell phone that is state of the art.
Yeah, they're brilliant. And what we really don't know yet is how they are best utilized. Are they going to be drivers of change or just facilitators? And if they're just facilitators, which is going to be my guess, then I still think you need some kind of concrete prescription or program that you are going to take on. Because for a lot of us, while it's interesting for a week or two to see how many steps or fuel points or whatever the measurement is that you're using, after a few weeks, that kind of goes away, that initial excitement about it. And so what are we going to do to keep that motivation going?
Yeah, and really, I think that's the trick to a lifetime career of exercising, is to vary it, not have it become monotonous, have it also be enjoyable, motivating, and not injurious, and find the balance that encourages and supports your health without undermining it.
That's absolutely right. And so it's all about motivation and having, I think, crisp, time-based goals. And so my hope is that when people participate in this type of exercise prescription and realize that it feels good and it makes sense, then they're going to be chomping at the bit for what do I do next. And that's where the 5K training comes in. And in my experience with training many, many people in a couch to 5K type program, you literally can take someone who couldn't have envisioned themselves walking around a track once or twice. I have one participant who 3 years ago was in that situation, and she recently just did her first half marathon 2 weekends
ago.
Wow,
that's super exciting.
It's awesome. And, you know, when you compare it to some of the other things that we find ourselves doing in healthcare with titrating medications and thinking about side effects to this or that, to find someone who really is not only walking the talk but running it, and getting out there and getting active and feeling good, I think that's the best prescription of all. It's incredibly gratifying to see it get filled.
It's truly transformative. Can we switch gears now and talk a little bit about a problem that is rare but can be tragic, which is from time to time we hear of a college athlete, perhaps a high school athlete, who dies, literally dies on the basketball court. An otherwise healthy individual, you'd think there's no reason for them to be precluded from activity, who tragically dies. These are unavoidable episodes, or you're involved in a program that attempts to provide an early intervention for athletes at risk.
Yeah, so we're talking about sudden cardiac death in young people, and it's very important to distinguish this type of heart disease from the type that plagues us as we grow older. For folks as we grow older, we're more concerned about something called coronary artery disease, the development of plaque inside the walls of blood vessels that leads to heart attacks.
But so this is not because this college athlete ate too many Big Macs. It's not about that.
Correct. Those Big Macs may impact them in 20, 30 years, but when they're college age, it's more thinking about inherited causes of heart disease. We have terms like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, long QT syndrome, Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome. They're these fancy terms that describe situations in which younger people may be predisposed to have dangerous or even lethal heart rhythms, particularly at maximum exercise. And it turns out that we can identify many of these potential causes with a very simple test. It takes about 3 minutes and is non-invasive and painless, and it's called an EKG.
Even just a regular EKG, you don't have to go to something fancy or more expensive like the echocardiogram to always spot that.
That's generally the case. And the nice thing about an EKG is that it's portable, easy to do. With our program, we go into schools and community centers and make arrangements with sports teams. And so we've been screening kids for several years, and we identify some sort of cardiac issue in about 1 in 100 to 1 in 150 kids. And And while we can't know for sure whether that cardiac condition would have caused a bad outcome, we do think it's helpful for families and coaches and the person themselves to recognize if these things are there and they can act on them. And so one of my goals actually in writing this book was I wanted to see what we could do about paying forward the idea of good heart health. And so for folks who do read this book, 100% of any royalties for the book purchase actually goes to support heart screenings for kids.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's like Paul Newman's salad dressing. It's a great salad dressing, plus it's going to charity. So I guess
I hope to be at the Paul Newman of salad dressings in terms of this kind of thing. That would be awesome.
Or the Paul Newman of exercise.
There you go.
In this case.
I have brown eyes, but I'll do my best. No, it would be a wonderful idea. And, you know, if we can do something to pay forward our healthy decisions to somebody else, that would be a pretty nice situation, too.
Great. Okay, so the book is Heart to Start, The 8-Week Exercise Prescription to Live Longer, Beat Heart Disease, and Run Your Best Rate, the Race. The author is Dr. James Beckerman, today's guest. And Dr. Beckerman, what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? You got websites to go to. There's a website for actually this screening program for young athletes.
I'll share it all. You can read more about the book and program at hearttostart.org or on Facebook at facebook.com/hearttostart and learn more about heart screenings at playsmartgetscreened.org.
Once again, please.
playsmartgetscreened.org.
And it's hearttostart.com, correct?
.com or .org.
Okay, great. All right, so yeah, the weather's getting warmer. Here it's, conditions are a little dawning here in New York. I don't know what they're like out there where you are in Portland, but a lot of people are suffering from cabin fever. But pretty soon the spring thaw will begin, and it's time to get outside, get going, get motivated. And this book will provide you with a great structure to help you move into a higher level of preventive exercise. So thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Beckerman.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest, Dr. James Beckerman, thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.